are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and Abe is currently not here. Hopefully he'll join us soon enough. But Out Now is a film podcast where Abe and I discuss new movies weekly. We dig into film via Moses Murray for your review, the occasional commentary track, or some other film movie topic. This is episode 649, and this week we're talking J. Kelly, the latest film from director Noah Baumbach, starring George Clooney and Adam Sandler. Joining me, and ideally Abe, soon enough, we will have to talk J. Kelly with us. He is the co-founder and current producer of Film Spotting, and he also requires a slice of cheesecake wherever he goes. It's Sam the Man Van Algren.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Aaron. I appreciate it.
Oh, good to have you here.
I've still got more thoughts on Minecraft if we want to go there.
I'm glad to hear it. We have a lot of guests on the show. I like to keep, when you do the show as long as we have, it's hard to keep track of every single movie that our guests do. But I do like to think of the kind of the pathway of where guests become regulars. And so it's Minecraft to J. Kelly.
This is my redemption. This is it, I hope.
We'll see what the trifecta becomes.
That's right.
We'll see what random schlock we can pull out for you.
What would be the correct third pairing, yeah.
But, Sam, glad to have you back here. Looking forward to discussing this movie and more. Some quick show notes. First up, as we just mentioned, we're talking J. Kelly. There are a lot of awards-related films and prestige releases and contenders and what have you coming out this time of year. So Abe and I are certainly trying to do our best to keep up with that. So at the time of this recording, we'll have just released our latest awards special, another triptych of films. We talked about House of Dynamite, Nouvelle Vague, and Hamnet. Check that one out if you haven't already. Ideally, we'll get at least one more round of multiple reviews and one fun bonus episode, but stay tuned. What else? Commentaries. We do a commentary every month of this podcast because they are fun to do. And to wrap up this year and for December, in honor of its 30th anniversary, we are going to be talking 12 Monkeys.
Love 12 Monkeys.
The Terry Gilliam film. Yes, yeah, 12 Monkeys rocks. So I am excited to get that recorded. We'll be doing that probably sometime this week and go from there. And for those that might remember last year, we had a bonus commentary because why not? And we might do something similar this year. So keep that in mind for listeners that know what we're possibly talking about. What else? Stranger Things. A long time ago, we talked about Stranger Things Season 1 on this podcast. Boy, is it weird to say a long time ago we talked about Stranger Things Season 1 and they're only on Season 5, but that's what happened. 9 years later, we decided, hey, let's talk about the last season of Stranger Things. So we did, and since the episodes are coming out in batches, we're going to have three episodes. So we already released one episode. So if you want to check out our thoughts on the latest episode of Stranger Things, you can hear just that, something that was intended to be 45 minutes and turned into 2 hours.
So come on, you're not surprised, Aaron. Don't lie.
We had lots of thoughts on Stranger Things. It was supposed to be literally a guerrilla podcast of us, like a quick kill. Let's get this out of the way. And then it's much longer than that. All right. And of course, if you like all of this nonsense we're doing here, it's all very free, and you can find it all on iTunes or Spotify, which would be great because you can give us a rating and review there, which would be awesome for us because you can pop us up with the old charts and all that, that good stuff. Put us in those top 50 lists of TV and film podcasts, those very sacred lists that we look forward to reading all the time. But yeah, all right, let's get into things. Let's do some Out Now quickies. TME tricking out now. I speed that up. It's fun. It's fun to do. Sam, I want to know what else.
I listen on 2x speed already, Aaron. So I don't know what I'm going to be able to. See,
I always wonder that because I do this. We do this bit, and then I have to imagine there are people that do listen to podcasts even faster than we talk about. So like, it must sound crazy when they're listening to this kind of nonsense. But Sam, what else have you seen recently?
Well, these are the year. I want to say this is the year of Josh O'Connor, but it's really been the years of Josh O'Connor. Maybe starting with Challengers. I don't know. I mean, I remember
certainly popped
he really popped with Challengers. Yeah. And I have yet to see The Mastermind. I have not seen The History of Sound. I have not seen the new Rebuilding, which came out of nowhere, which is also looks great. But I could not let another year go by, certainly, without seeing Alice Rohrwacher's La Chimera. Have you seen this?
La Chimera.
I was just like, I need to put a stop to this in this year of O'Connor. I need to see it. It's a movie that I was excited about when it came out. I loved her Happy as Lazaro. Yeah. And so I just, yeah, And I loved it. It's maybe the best new to me film I've seen this year.
I love that. I love doing that. Like, yeah.
So it was great. I love her handling of magic realism. I think it's so special. I think she has something real to say about how faith and capitalism collide in the modern world. I don't think she's just a critic, though. I do think she offers this way of experiencing an alternate world. I love spending time in her headspace, and it's such a different vocabulary than like Hollywood films. So it just felt like a retreat. It felt like a vacation. I loved so like Chimera. Is that how we're saying it?
Yeah,
Okay.
because it's old.
I've
It's
never
but
said it out loud. I don't know if I've heard it out loud. So
it's an old. Well, if you've seen Mission Impossible 2,
a
it's because it's
chimera.
Chimera and Bellerophon. They're old
Yes, right. There we
Greek
go.
creatures.
And O'Connor was fantastic. I mean,
He
he's
is.
just
He really is. He
he
really
can
shines.
do anything,
That's
clearly.
what between watching Challengers and La Chimera, I'm like, this guy's got the juice. Like he's got it all right here. I'm like, I've been on the O'Connor train because of that. It certainly wanted me to. Inspired me to see, the other, among other reasons, but that was, it's like, oh, he's in this. He's great. So,
I am curious about him hosting SNL like next
yes,
weekend. I'm
very
like,
much so. Yeah.
does anybody know who this man is who in this small pocket of movie watchers, he's like the dude, he's the guy.
Yeah, both his popularity as well as does he is he funny? Is he funny in this way?
At this point, I would be shocked if
In
he didn't just
Challengers, he's
crush
very
it. Yeah,
funny.
he's very
It
funny.
well it well there's another movie I believe you saw of Josh O'Connor, which
Yes, I did. I was
I
going to
think
guess
he's quite fu I think he's funny there as
he's
well, but
very good in Wake Up Dead Man. Yeah, he's great. So that is the other O'Connor I saw this year, and he's terrific. And I loved the character that that Ryan creates there. I am in the very, very small minority of people who just did not go for Wake Up Dead Man. I failed to find this as a believable place, time, set of characters that would stay under this one roof long enough for this mystery to be solved. I just didn't believe it in the
Did you
way that
believe Glass Onion?
more so, less so than the first Knives Out, and
Okay.
this less so more than Glass Onion. There was a sense of this being a little contrived, I felt like, in terms of the characters we're bringing in and their lack of memorability. Kaylee Spanning, I love. Kerry Washington, Renner, the great Andrew Scott. I love these actors. There's nothing that I look forward to seeing on a rewatch that I feel like will be revealing about those characters, compared to certainly the stock of characters that we had in the previous Knives Out installments. I loved what Ryan was wrestling with. The hypocrisy, the aligning of the conservative wing of the church with the with the MAGA folks, and there's a lot of great, fascinating stuff there. I found it ultimately a little contrived,
Fair enough.
which was sad for me. You know what I love though is Predator Badlands.
Hey, there
God,
you
just
go.
caught up with it. Loved
Yeah.
it. Just loved it.
It's super fun, and if the reins of this franchise are going to stay in the hands of Dan Trachtenberg,
Oh,
then
please.
good, because this is it's been a I enjoy Predator. I love the first Predator. I like
Me
Predator
too.
too, but I'm not going to say that this franchise has been one where it's like, man, doesn't get better than this. So the fact that Dan
Right,
Trachtenberg's
it's
come
not
along,
sacred. It doesn't feel sacred in that way. Yes,
yeah.
right. Do what you will with it. Yeah, Dan Trachtenberg.
And
Yeah.
he's come along and just like really just between Prey and did you see the animated one by
I did
chance?
not. Yeah.
It's
Were you a fan?
also, I understand hesitancy is be like, do I need to watch a cartoon Predator movie? But like it's very well
Oh, I'm
done.
curious now. Yeah.
I mean, if you watch Badlands, you understand that the action is just so well conceived and what have you. The animated one is just all that. It's three separate stories that's focused entirely on his imagination when it comes to how to conceive great action sequences. But yes, Badlands, super fun. Super,
Well,
super
great. Yeah.
fun.
Great
Great work.
handling of action, but also just funny in a way that didn't
Yeah.
undermine the stakes of it. I thought Elle Fanning was terrific. So, yeah. Huge fan. I've seen other things. I don't know how long you want to go on this.
No, it's fine.
I saw
No.
Theater Camp for the 10th time.
I know you're a big fan of Theater Camp, yes.
It was our Thanksgiving night watch with the family. Please help me, Aaron. I just need to put this out into the world. Let's get Theater Camp on Blu-ray. It doesn't exist. It's just
Yeah,
streaming out there.
that is a shame when you have these Hulu releases that don't get these physical media cut, but it would be nice to just have. Well, I've seen a few things. You mentioned Josh O'Connor, and I actually did see The Mastermind finally this weekend,
Nice.
the Kelly Reichardt film. I'm a fan of Kelly Reichardt. This felt like something of a departure as far as the sort of tone she generally goes for in her movies. Mainly because it just has a more, I don't want to say direct plot, but I mean, it is, it's about this guy who's the definition of small time crook, as he is starts out just like taking very little trinkets from museums before kind of escalating things into broader territory, and there's repercussions from there. But at the core of this is just another great Josh O'Connor performance. The way he conducts himself here is a lot of fun. There's a lot of great character actors in here, Bill Camp, among others. It's like I don't want to say it's the most fun I've ever had in a Kelly Reichardt movie, but it certainly has a sort of there's like a jazzy score that goes along with this whole thing, because it's very much supposed to be kind of this retro 70s kind of feel, and it's still has the sort of quietness that other Reichardt films have, but it certainly seems more active just because of the nature of having a thief at the center of
Sure,
all
right. There is a
things.
genre component to it a little bit.
For sure. And actually, honestly, the jazz score that's in there reminded me of something that it feels like something like Eastwood would put in a movie if he was making something like this, where like he know like the way he uses music feels very deliberate. That's less about like the I don't know, the velocity that jazz creates, and more of just like, what if we had a classy jazz score in my movie? Like, that's just kind of like that's
Yeah, just it creates a mood, it creates a
exactly,
headspace.
exactly. And so that felt like what Reichardt was going for here, as far as trying to set a certain kind of atmosphere. And yeah, I mean, the movie as a whole, I quite enjoyed. I wouldn't necessarily put it at like top Reichardt films, but I certainly thought it was a good time at the movies.
And O'Connor seems really good at playing unlikable guys, or guys you just have a hard time rooting for, like Chimera, another example of a really hard to like guy. This guy has suffered a tragedy, obviously, but really viscerally unpleasant, and yet still captivating, charismatic, really a special
This
actor.
is a character who's like, he has a wife and kids, and he's pulling off these weird heists, but you're like, well, it's almost, I compare it to Fantastic Mr. Fox, a character who settles down, but still in him is this desire to, like, I want to rob. Like, I want to, it's like,
He's got an itch.
that's not good for your family life, and yet I don't not want to watch you pull these things off, that kind of thing.
I like a caper. Come on.
Yeah. I've also saw, as far as, I saw a couple things. I saw Facom Hall. Have you heard of Facom
Yes,
Hall?
yeah. I wasn't clear on that it was a spoof until I watched the trailer, of course, and then what Facom Hall is meant to be translated as was did make me laugh out loud. So
This
yeah,
kind
what'd
of
you think?
came, I didn't love it, but I enjoy it. It's fun. Like, in the realm of spoof movies from this year, The Naked Gun wins as far as that goes. However, this kind of came out of nowhere. Like, I saw this trailer maybe 3 weeks ago, and I'm like, this is a movie? This is a thing? And it has all these famous people in here. I mean, you have Thomasin McKenzie, of all people, as like the lead, but then you have Catherine Waterston, Damian Lewis, Draco Malfoy himself, Tom Felton, and then just a number of other like people that are, I think, more famous in England, but certainly have a comedic edge to them. I know it's co-written, among others, by Jimmy Carr, big stand-up comedian over in England, who's kind of crossed over here a little bit. But it's a parody, it's a spoof movie that's crossing like a Downton Abbey with Airplane. And like, if you think that sounds funny, then you should check it out, because I do think it has enough jokes to like certainly be worthwhile. It's not the strongest in terms of like parodies I've seen, but just taking that setting and putting it into a parody like machine
Oh,
full of jokes,
ripe
and
for parody,
it's yeah,
certainly.
it's like it's about time we've done something like this.
Well, I was wondering, I was just thinking about Naked Gun because we were talking about it on Film Spotting. It's one of our guests for the final top 10 show actually has Naked Gun in their top 10. I will tease that, which I kind of loved. I just love a curveball like that. And I was thinking about how Akiva Schaffer does a great job capturing the spirit of the Airplane movies of the and that there is a fine line between what they do and something like Scary Movie, a parody. There is a real fine line in terms of the sense of humor, the kind of jokes, the leaning into absurdity. But does this feel more like straight up parody to you?
It like at the for the most part, like, yes, like I think it knows what it's winking at. It plays a lot with broad comedy that would apply to like any decade, as opposed to it's certainly not like the word, the epitome of all this, which became those like from the two writers of Scary Movie. It's like the two white guys, it's the two white guys who are just making superhero movie and date movie, all these ones that are just like they're references that are like about things that are a week old in reality and have no bearing on, and it's not even a joke. It's just like, hey, that's a thing that exists. Look at us pointing at that. Like, this is comedy that is very much like, let's take this setting and then apply just physical humor to it, or wordplay, or things that'll never age, which is a correct approach to kind of spoof comedy to begin with. But and yeah, in terms of like the like there is a plot, there is there are characters that are established. It's doing like the much like Airplane does. Airplane has a plot, it has
There's a plot.
characters, there's arcs. Like, it does the job of being a movie as well as being a joke machine.
Yeah,
Phantom
here's
Hall
one.
is, just by nature of it, not being one of the greatest comedies of all time, it's not quite matching that level, but it's still a good time at the movies. I enjoyed watching this,
Back 'em all.
and especially like I like Thomasin McKenzie quite a bit. She's a
Oh, I
very
love
fine
her.
young actress. The fact that she's like throwing herself into this nonsense, I'm like, good for her. Like,
Was she the
I'm all
name?
for
Was
this.
she the name they needed to make this thing happen? I don't know.
I mean, it's, well, give I mean she's
Is she
younger than
playing
a
in
majority.
America? Where is she from? Is she New Zealand? Is she Where is
I
she from?
believe she. I believe she's New Zealand. Yeah, she's New
New
Zealand.
Zealand,
She's
right?
from Rhode.
I was just wondering. I was like, she's not a Brit, but okay.
But yeah, I mean, given the age range of most of the characters, she is on the younger side. So it's like, yeah, probably, that's far among other things. Okay. So I watched Phantom Hall, which is quite, it was enjoyable. I saw two horror movies this week. One was the big release of the week, which made another ton of money,
Oh
which
my
was
God.
Five Nights at Freddy's 2. I was not a fan of the first Five Nights at Freddy's. And it's not as though I was like, this could not possibly be good either, but I like to give everything a chance.
Sure. Any movie can be good.
So I walked into Five Nights at Freddy's 2 open-minded, thinking maybe with the increase in budget, with more confidence behind it, they could make a better film, and they did not. It was a terrible, terrible film. It's very lazy. It's the kind of watered-down horror film that will certainly delight a subset of fans that are into the lore of it all, but as far as just being a movie, oh boy, it's the kind of lackluster horror film that puts emphasis on the wrong things. It's not particularly scary. Credit where credit's due, the production design is, if not, it's more than bet it's better than the first, just because they have a more budget to play with, and because it involves killer animatronics, there's something to be said for creating animatronics that look interesting on screen or what have you.
And
But
these are
other,
like, these are not CGI, I'm guessing.
oh yeah, they're
There's a certain
it's
weight to
lar
its practical effects.
yeah,
So that's kind of
exactly.
cool.
And you can tell that. I mean, there's
That's
obviously,
cool.
there's tinkering here and there when it comes to certain sequences, but obviously they are built to be physically realized on screen. So like that should it feels like this should be easier to pull off than it is. If you tell me there's a movie about an evil Chuck E. Cheese where the animatronics come to life and kill you, that sounds fun to me, but for some reason, in the realm of like horror movies, that's like, that's neat. I haven't, that's not something I never see all the time.
And
But
this is
in,
like PG-13 horror,
and it's
right? This is like,
PG-13,
yeah.
and I get that a younger audience can, it should serve as gateway horror,
Right.
but it's so convoluted with all these subplots about like, why are these things coming to life, and who's
We don't want to know.
responsible,
We
and
don't
who
want to
built them, and I'm
know.
like, what? And I, like, and there's like more to it, and I get that that's the games. The games has a lot of lore about where these things come from and all that. Watching a movie, I'm like, what's next in three? We're gonna find out the grandfather of the guy that built them, and his relationships and what they went through. Like, it's like, I don't care enough about this, and I'm sorry. And it's funny because you were on for our Minecraft film,
I was just thinking, this is what you should have brought me on for, clearly.
which you appreciate. We were originally going to do Five Nights at Freddy's before I realized Jay Kelly's like the better film we should be talking about this week. Especially when I'm talking about the giant box office winner that's Five Nights at Freddy's. It's like, well, there's a Noah Baumbach film right here. But you were on for Minecraft, which we talked about, and you were more favorable for it than I was. And my issue stemmed from like there felt like there was a lot of Leo pointing moments kind of scattered throughout there that weren't matching. It wasn't doing enough to match me being entertained by just the sheer humor of Jack Black and Jason Momoa and all that. I'll watch plenty of Minecrafts over more Five Nights at Freddy's movies.
Okay. All
So
right.
when
That's
my,
you. We put it in the right comparison box
so
there.
when
Okay.
so when a Minecraft movie 2 comes out, and you're obviously back on the podcast, we'll make
Pencil
sure
me in.
to we'll see we'll see where that goes. All
I have to
right.
say, like briefly, like Hutcherson, who is an actor I only know from the Hunger Games movies, I think is incredible in those movies. I think he's like the standout, certainly young actor,
He's
even
a
more
solid
than
actor.
than J Law. He's really good. So I was happy to see that he was kind of doing something that it was making a little money. I don't know what the dude is like in real life, but I'm like, this kid should be getting more opportunities. And unfortunately,
Well,
it's these kind of opportunities.
I mean, for one thing, they're lucrative opportunities, so I can't fault him too much for making
Sure.
money on a thing that he can participate in every couple of years and be fine. He is currently on the HBO show with Rachel Sennett, I Love LA.
Oh,
He's like
okay.
he's her
Good to
boyfriend
know.
on that show. So he's like he's got you know
Good job, Josh.
he's
All right.
working. But so that was so I said I had two horror movies. Fortunately, the way I structured this, just because people need to know about my night apparently, I missed the Five Nights at missed is an operative word. I deliberately didn't go to my screening for Five Nights at Freddy's 2 because I'm like, I had three screenings already. I can't do all these screenings in 1 week. So instead, I planned it out where I'd just go see it on my own, go to the library, write the review, the best kind of reviews because you can only do one thing at the library, which is work. So I'm like, good, got
I
that
love
knocked out
that.
of the way. Then I went to the premiere of Silent Night, Deadly Night. This is a remake of an 80s cult favorite slasher movie. It's directed by Mike P. Nelson, who directed the recent remake of Wrong Turn, a film that I've talked about favorably on this podcast. I was surprised how much I liked this remake of the movie Wrong Turn. So now he's directing the remake of Silent Night, Deadly Night. Silent Night, Deadly Night, which is, of course, about a killer Santa Claus, if you couldn't guess that already. The original Silent Night, Deadly Night is not a very good movie. It's 80s cheese. That's
So
what
you
it
did the
is.
work. You did you catch up with it in
Oh,
order?
I've seen them already.
Okay.
But going into this, I'm like, it's because I like the director. It's from the studio Sinverse, which is responsible for the Terrifier movies. I
Got it.
like those films, so I'm thinking, all right, at the very least, I'll get like just a fun Santa Claus kills people movie. One of those, one of those fun Santa Claus kills people movies. Everybody, that's all I can about.
The people give the people what they want.
Fortunately, this movie was much better than I anticipated.
Oh,
It
okay.
delivers on not only just being a Santa Claus kill people movie, but it. I don't want to. I love saying this. I don't want to spoil the things that happen in Silent Night, Deadly Night. However, there is a twist to the nature of why the lead character is killing people in a way that I did not expect. And the film reveals fairly, or not necessarily reveals fairly early on, but certainly gives. There's hints at what's going on that kind of reveal themselves throughout that I think is cleverer than one may expect from a film like this. It stars Rohan Campbell. Rohan Campbell played the. He's in the third Halloween movie of recent years, Halloween Ends, as the kind of main character in that film that became like he was with Mike. He was synonymous with Michael Myers. He became like this kind of Michael surrogate type character. Regardless what people think of that film, I like him as a young actor in these horror movies. He was in The Monkey also earlier this year. So now he starts in this film as this character Billy, who's a killer Santa Claus, and the fact that they give him more moral complexity as to why he's doing the things he's doing, I quite appreciated. And the film itself is done quite well. It's made in this sort of lo-fi style. It reminded me of like Ty West when he was making films like House of the Devil or The Innkeepers, which has a sort of it's not a standard horror film. There's effort going into the production value and the cinematography to give it a sort of different aesthetic that calls to mind earlier eras without being like overt. It's not like throwing big hits on the soundtrack and making it very obvious, like, look at this, it's the 70s. It's instead trying to do its own thing that just resembles the atmosphere quite effectively. So I'm not going to say Silent Night, Deadly Night is the best thing I've ever seen when it comes to horror or what have you, but I was quite impressed by what I got out of it. I had a really good time watching it. It comes out next week, I believe. So if you're looking for some horror this year or this winter, you can avoid Five Nights at Freddy's. I would say instead walk over to Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Well, as somebody who grew up in the 80s and, any supermarket had a VHS section, okay? And as somebody who, while their mom shopped, would just sit in the video section reading the backs of VHS cases or staring at the covers, Silent Night, Deadly Night is absolutely one I can
You remember
recall
one?
right now. It was just one of those, again, it's just like, it's not like they put aside the titles that were maybe not appropriate for kids. And so, yeah, it sort of just lingers, haunt. You say Silent Night, Deadly Night. It's 1984, five.
It's a
I'm staring
good
at Silent
poster.
Night
It's
on
just the
VHS. Yeah.
chimney and like you see an
Yes,
arm with
that's
the
it.
axe. Like
Yes,
that's what it
that's what I'm
is.
saying.
It was boycotted back in the day. There are people out there that are like, how
Oh
dare
yeah.
you ruin the spirit of Christmas with this murderous Santa
Sacrilege.
Claus movie? Yeah. How dare you infect the children's minds with this garbage and what have you. But no, it's a fun movie, this new one. It's very not self-aware, but there's a lot of, if you're looking for it, there's a lot of movie references to horror movies and other movies in general that I picked up on, and I was like, oh,
Okay.
this has some moves. So
Great. Good to hear.
there you go. That's it, our quickies. TM, let's move on now. Let's get to our trailer talk. We're talking about one of the newest movie trailers of the week, when it's coming out, what we thought of it, and what have you. This week we have Mother Mary. Mother
Yeah.
Mary is the latest film from director David Lowery, responsible for such films as The Green Knight, A Ghost Story, and of course, Peter Pan and Wendy. quite the
Yeah.
career, because
They
Abe
had
and
it
I, we're
all
big
coming.
fans of. I'm a
Oh,
big fan
yeah.
of The Green Knight and The Old
Oh,
Man
great.
with a Gun's
Incredible.
quite good,
Ghost Story. I
but
love Gold
also.
Man and the Gun.
But also, Pete, he did Pete's Dragon back in the earlier days of these Disney live action remakes, which we continue to think is one of the stronger efforts, just
Yeah,
because
pretty good.
it's different. It's not just let's rehash the same thing, but bad. It's like, well, Pete's Dragon, nobody cares about that. Let's just do our own movie. And it's like,
Exactly. No, he made a Lowry movie.
he
Yeah,
made a
that's
Lowry
good.
movie out of Pete's
Yeah.
Dragon. So now we have Mother Mary.
Yeah.
I'm just going to read what the basic Wikipedia synopsis says, because it's hard to like, just to describe a plot. It says, follows a psychosexual affair between pop singer Mary and fashion designer San after the former's need for a dress for her new tour draws them back together. It stars Anne Hathaway and Michaela Cole, among others. I believe FKA Twigs, the music stars in there. Hunter Schafer is also in here. Sam, I want to know, you've seen this
Yeah,
trailer. What'd you
I
think of the
have.
trailer for Mother Mary? Are you excited for
Well,
this
you put
film?
this on my radar. I had not I did not know this was coming. Do we have like a release date-ish? It's 2026, but we don't.
April
April,
is what
okay.
it says. Yeah.
I mean, so I went in, this trailer was a journey. I will say that. It was a
Yes, I
journey.
would
I
agree.
went on a journey as I watched it. I mean, anything new Lowry, I'm interested. Okay, baseline, I want to be there. I saw that Hathaway was in it. I was like, I like Hathaway. I know that there's some lingering maybe hate out there for Hathaway. I've always been a fan. I
I
think she's
feel like we're
always been good.
past that
Are we past
phase.
it now?
I
Good.
feel like,
Okay.
well, I feel like it shifted to Jennifer Lawrence for
Oh no,
Abe.
no. Why?
For a while, and now I think that's kind of faded. Now it's going to go
Okay,
to
good.
somebody else, probably. You know, the curse,
Yeah, great. Well, I
apparently.
like Hathaway, so I'm doubly intrigued now. It's a music film, which I like when music films work, especially original music films. I was intrigued. I'm becoming more and more intrigued as we accumulate interesting things. Lowry, Hathaway, music film. I immediately wanted to know, of course, who is making the music. And then it's like, well, it's Antonov. And I was just a little bit like, eh, that seems a little uninspired. He seems like he's everywhere. He's spread too thin. And of course, I'm thinking like, is this about Taylor? Is this a Taylor? Is this a, is this, are we commenting on Taylor? And I have to say, like, talk about things I don't really think, feel like thinking about. So that's where I was kind of at. And then, you know, the Michaela Cole stuff seemed really interesting. There's a Ouija board. I was like, I don't know if I love that. Then it's like, oh, so are we talking literally Mother Mary, Mary, Mother of Christ here, bringing that imagery in? It seems like a big swing. It seems, my feeling was that it feels a little out of Lowry's comfort zone. And so by the end of it, I think I was a little skeptical and maybe a little less interested than I was over generic new David Lowry movie. Like, excited about that. This one made me, I don't know, a little skeptical.
I'm a little more I'm more excited than you are about this film.
Okay.
Mainly because I like a big swing. And
I
David
do too.
Lowery, I would say David Lowery is someone that's had such an interesting career for me so far, as far as, you know, looking at the variety of different kinds of films. They may share a certain kind of, I don't want to say grim, but certainly a sort of moody atmosphere that you can connect between all of his films, even Peter Pan and Wendy.
Yeah, sure. Yep.
But like, you know, just largely based on the sheer scale of something like The Green Knight, an A24 film that still looked like, you know, I was gonna say $1 million was like it'll cost more than $1 million, but like you know, it has such a different sort of feel, let alone a naturalistic one. Where I'm like, well, what's he gonna do with something that's even more seemingly fantastical and presumably darker? Let alone what's he grasp? Like, they also the curiosity, just the curiosity of what's he grasping at here? Calling
Yes,
Cthulhu Mother
exactly.
Mary, you know,
Yep.
having this kind of very specific sort of relationship. And yet, Mother Mary is the movie. Like, what's that going to be? Also, you know, I like Anne Hathaway as well. I like Michaela Cole. Like, I seeing her, if she gets a chance to break out into films more, I'm all for that. I think she's a very talented actress and a filmmaker for that matter, writer. And so the idea of planting these two in something that's going to be, at the very least, stylistically rich, I'm very curious about. And even when it comes to A24's take on pop stardom and just like the last, I don't know if you're a fan of Vox Lux,
That's what
but
it made me think of. I was like, "Is the, if this is his Vox Lux, do we need another movie about a conflicted white pop star?" It just felt like, and that's
and
why I was
that's
intrigued by Michaela Cole being involved. Yeah.
yeah, that I would say the same as far as what's going to separate this from being another one of those kinds of things. I feel like we'll talk about that a bit with Jay Kelly as well, as far as like, oh no, this guy's in trouble. With this, I'm like, okay, so you have there's a different element there, sure, but even regardless, I know you mentioned Jack Antonoff at the music. I tend to like the bangers they pull off of these A24 imagined pop star movies because I feel like because there's no time for nuance with them, you don't have a lot of tracks that are like about the subtleties and whatnot. They're just all like high velocity like hits, which is what I
Hey,
liked about Vox
I like
Lux
the
quite a
music
bit.
in trap. So
Yeah,
I'm gonna like the
exactly. I
music.
like the
Okay, so
trap music. I like Smile 2 has bangers.
yeah,
Like, so I'm
sure,
like,
exactly. No, I like it.
I'm all for it. And all thriller, no filler kind of like
No, you're
soundtrack
right.
from these kind of movies.
That's fine.
So like at the what I'm saying is at the very least, if I get a stylish exercise that puts two actors somewhat out of their comfort zone, and I get to have a soundtrack that I can kind of bang to, you know, bang my head to like while I'm driving around.
Great.
Good. That's that's a that's a nice that's a
Right.
nice low level requirement. But if there's something more there, which I imagine there will be, and I respond to it in a way that engages me in what ways I wasn't expecting, as far as either, I don't know, in a theological way or
Sure.
in a kind of dark fantasy way. I don't know what that's going to be exactly, but I
And potentially, like, interesting conversation about race, which I'm real
yeah,
that's
also
maybe the
true.
most intriguing thing to me in terms of the pop landscape
Which,
and
looking at this cast, I mean, there are presumably going to be questions raised. So,
Yes. No.
I you know,
Intriguing.
compared to Five Nights at Freddy's 3, I am
On
I think Mother Mary certainly has me
that
intrigued.
continuum, sure. Yeah. Mother Mary. Yeah.
Well, the film opens April 2026. We shall see. All right, let's get to our main review for Jay Kelly.
Stars.
Is that Jake Kelly?
They come and go.
Pardon, Monsieur Jake Kelly.
They come fast, they come slow.
When I look at you, I see my whole life.
You go like the last light of the sun.
I don't know who to be mad at, but I'm finding myself being very mad at you, Ron.
You'd be mad at me, Liz. The train was my idea.
That's the problem. I'm not allowed to be mad at you.
All you see is glory.
Lately, I feel like my life doesn't really feel real. I'm suddenly remembering things. What is that? Memory? That's like a movie where I'm playing myself.
All right, that should have been some of the trigger for Jay Kelly. For at least a decade, George Clooney has made it very clear that he is so insanely wealthy that he only chooses to act or direct if he really feels like the project is worth his time. Judging by his last decade of work outside of a Coen Brothers movie, it seems like he could use a bigger challenge. Meanwhile, Sandler has continued to show that given the chance to be in more serious-minded projects, he can act as good as the rest of them. Now we bring in Noah Baumbach, who is coming off a critical high with Marriage Story, as well as a wild blank check project with his adaptation of White Noise. Together with a script co-written by Emily Mortimer, this group has now made Jay Kelly, a look at the friendship between the blockbuster movie star and his manager as they go on an impromptu trip through Europe and start reflecting on their life choices, relationships, and legacies. Sam,
Yeah.
given Clooney's own status as an aging movie star, did you find this examination of the life of this type of figure to be effective for this film?
Okay, so I really like this movie. Baumbach is maybe, I was thinking about it, maybe my favorite writer and director of movie dialogue. I mean, as somebody who came of age in the Woody Allen golden era and eating that stuff up. That's always been a part of my movie diet that I really love and really appreciate. And I think, you know, Marriage Story is maybe the best example of Baumbach just doing it so right and really, you know, taking adult relationships seriously and still finding a way to make, you know, these people that are really struggling still be funny and real and emotional. So I'm a sucker for Baumbach stuff. I think he's great. I think the dialogue is fantastic here. Writing with Emily Mortimer, as you mm-hmm. wrote, I think her story, her concept. I think this movie works despite two pretty big problems, both of which I think Baumbach is aware of, which makes it kind of bearable. Mm. The first is, I don't think there's any honest redemption for this character to be had. It's not possible, given the confines of the movie. The only possible redemption for him is time that he can offer to the people that are meaningful to him, and he doesn't have enough of it left. And I think Baumbach knows that. So this isn't about Clooney's character becoming a better guy. That would have been a false movie. Mm-hmm. This is about a guy realizing that we are the sum of our choices, and that is it. That will always be it. And that makes it universal enough. Because I was wondering too, is this movie about the ultra wealthy, ultra elite, out of touch person? Is this going to be universal enough for us to really appreciate? Thankfully, there are a lot of interesting characters around him. Sandler's character, his manager, most of all. The second big problem, and I am fascinated to know if this crossed your mind too.
Okay.
Is that to have a chance at being great, this movie, I think, had to have an element of danger in it. And that would have mean a major casting coup. It needed to be Tom Cruise and not George Clooney. You even get George Clooney running at some point. I mean, this had already occurred to me that this was the movie Tom Cruise. This could have been his wrestler, right? This would have been, imagine how painful this would have been to watch Cruise in this role, who's, I think, probably the same age as Clooney, or more or less, he's in his early 60s. And this is somebody coming to terms with their life choices. And we're much more conscious of the choices that Cruise has made. Career, he does not have like a successful track record as a family man. Mm-hmm. Again, this isn't about this movie needing to be meta to work. I just think in order for it to have a chance to really break through as something a little dangerous, I don't think maybe Baumbach even wants that, but I would be fascinated to know if Cruise was the initial model for this, whether he was ever offered the part. Of course, we have no idea. There is, I think Clooney in an interview had a little bit of an aside talking about how challenging this film was to cast. And he did say Tom Cruise was busy, which is just, again, I came across that after watching the movie and sort of looking into it. I was like, I somebody must have written about this. So again, I just think this is not the Baumbach of like Margot at the Wedding. This is not the bitter guy. This is a guy who I think, and again, I'm grateful for, I'm happy for Baumbach that he seems to be in a really good place. And doesn't as tough and emotionally, you know, challenging as a lot of the stuff in Marriage Story was. It might be just that he doesn't need to go there. He just does not need to go there. And there are some wonderful, really tough emotional scenes. There's pain in this movie. It's real. It feels authentic. It feels something that the writers here understand in terms of family dynamics and all kinds of stuff. But those are the two issues I feel like in terms of like, this is a very good movie. It can't have been great given maybe the reality of the movie and what they made.
It's funny you mentioned Baumbach's kind of state of being currently, because I completely agree with you. There's a certain turning point, whether it's Greenberg or Francis Ha, somewhere in there, but it's basically what he means kind of growing.
It's literally, right.
And the difference here that I find between him and, here's a long, a different director, but Tim Burton. When Tim Burton settled down, when he started having a family and kids, he and let alone becoming accepted by the mainstream culture, he wasn't just the kid in the corner that's weird anymore. So
that's
his
right.
movies became... they're just not
safer, just a little safer.
Yes, they're less safer. Dark. So, like, more, you know, I wouldn't say there's any Tim Burton film I outright hate, but there's certainly not a lot of like classics in the way that he was just knocking out some really good, or at least at the very least, interesting films in the early 90s to the basically the late 90s.
Well, the same thing has been said about Spielberg in some way too, right? In terms of like how something Jurassic Park works, in terms of how the kid dynamics, the content.
Yeah.
It's just a little safer. He's less willing to go to really dangerous places, which again is totally fine. That's a journey directors go on.
Yeah. With Baumbach, I find it fascinating because it's not like despite the fact that I kind of abhor Margot at the Wedding.
I loved it. It's a 5-star movie for me. And it's so unpleasant.
If I watched it again, I might have a different, but like at the time I was just like, this is just not doing it. And I like Squid and the Whale, and I like Kicking and Screaming. So it's like, this is just going too far. Regardless, the difference here is his films remain relatively good. Like, even if they're safer, there's just something there where it's like, I am intrigued by the way he's presenting his characters through dialogue and through what have you. Like, you mentioned Marriage Story can get really rough in the weeds as far as like how far these arguments are, what have you. So watching Jake Kelly, this is very slight for Baumbach. But I don't think it's very slight.
Maybe for Baumbach, but it doesn't feel slight.
I'll say it feels slight for Baumbach as far as like what I've seen him do before. But it is also deceptively cynical, which I kind of appreciated. There's something there where, I mean, you already mentioned it, as far as Clooney's character, not an evil man, but he certainly made choices that, yes, they lead him down a path that he can't really redeem himself from, at least in a movie that's not trying to be contrived about it. There's a terrible version of this movie where like everything goes his way and his family comes together. This is not that movie. This is a movie that is profoundly sad by the end of it, as far as what we see of this man during this big, you know, achievement award ceremony versus what he's feeling, which is, I don't want to say saved the movie for me, because I like this movie too. I don't like it, I don't think, as much as you do, but I do like the movie overall. I've watched it twice so far. So I'm like, okay, like it's a very watchable film. It's very enjoyable as far as, you know, lots of characters, dialogue overlapping, lots of action going on. There's a lot of stuff there that just makes it like you could easily put this on and be set.
Well, no, but to your point, there is a look on Clooney's face during that during the ceremony where he's being forced to rewatch his life, essentially his life in movies, the previous 35 years. And there is a look, there's a place Clooney gets to I have never seen him get to on screen.
And I want to talk about Clooney more in a bit and what have you, but as far as just the movie as a whole goes, I mean, yeah, it slight might be like a harsh word to use. I do think it's sort of in the realm of movies about actors that tend to some degree satirize Hollywood, but at the very least have kind of a sharper eye towards it. This one's really not like hitting very hard. Like and that's not to say necessarily it's safe, but it's just like the intention of this film isn't to skewer the Hollywood culture necessarily, or at least to some damaging degree or whatnot. It's really just a character drama that happens to focus on a very specific.
Well, I feel like it's not skewering because it's an elegy for movies. It's not just an elegy for the Clooney character, but the movie opens on the final shot of a film that's just about to be wrapped. Mm-hmm. The Clooney character is dying. It's his death scene.
Yeah.
Again, there's all these references to mortality and death soon after the movie wraps. It feels like the last movie. It feels like...
And to that point, I don't know if I call it an issue, but it's more of, why is Baumbach doing this? Like, where is this coming from Mortimer? Like, it's not like either of them are aged out of the system at all. If anything, they're like in the prime of their careers. Like, they're getting to do exactly whatever they want to do at this point, giving money to do it and having giant movie stars to work with. It's not like they've been hardened by this system and have to, like, here's their final words before they go off into the sunset. They're like, you know, middle-aged
people.
But
the industry, in terms of the state of the industry, I mean, this is a guy who, this is cruel, but like sold his soul to Netflix. I mean, this is a movie that 90% of the people that take the time to watch it and watch his last... what, three movies, going back to Meyerowitz Stories, right?
Yeah.
And White Noise. I mean, and even Marriage Story, right, is a Netflix movie. Yeah. I think it got maybe a bit of a better.
But they're all produced for Netflix. They're not acquired. They are Netflix budgeted films.
So I just think, like, in terms of the arc of where the industry is going,
I see what you're saying as far as he's come from an era that was, he's come from the 90s. He's come from like prime art house era. It's finally kind of kicking in, gone through the studio system to a point as far as making, you know, independent movie or, you know, art house fare for a mainstream audience. And now he's the kinds of stories he wants to tell are relegated to a Netflix just by nature of how the system works. I can see where you're coming from there as far as why it would be interesting to tell a sort of elegy of movies. Also, side note, that's why Tom Cruise didn't do this movie, because he's not going to do Netflix. Tom Cruise is never going to do a straight
No
movie.
kidding. No, that's just one reason he wouldn't do it.
That's one
Yes,
reason.
exactly.
I would argue Tom Cruise, I mean, it would be interesting to see him do it again now, but something I really like about Vanilla Sky, the Cameron Crowe film, is that that's very much a movie that's puncturing the identity of Tom Cruise.
Sure.
About that, regardless of what people think about that movie, I quite like it, but I
No,
do
he's
think
been willing
there's
to do it to puncture that, yeah,
exactly.
over
So,
the
like,
years, sure.
I'll be very curious whatever the movie he's doing with Alejandro Iñárritu is, because I have a feeling it has something to do with something similar to like this kind of a story, maybe not as direct, but I think it's not an action movie. I know that, so we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
But yeah, I mean, yes, looking at this film, okay, yeah. So I can agree with you as far as yes, being a Netflix film, there is the foundation for why Baumbach will be willing to kind of look at the industry in this light and deal with these kinds of themes, I suppose. But no, let's talk about the other aspects of this film. I mean, a lot of this film regards obviously J. Kelly, but it's also his network, which of course basically headed by Adam Sandler as his longtime manager, and then I guess who's Laura Dern, like his publicist, I
I
guess
think publicist. Yep, that was my
publicist,
guess. Yeah.
and then like his lawyer's just on the phone. We never like see his
Yep.
lawyer or whatnot.
Right.
But so okay, so Sandler, just as big of this film as Clooney is, I think he's great here.
He is great.
I
He's so good.
really there's a bit where he sits down with his other client,
Oh, yeah.
who I don't
I
necessarily
almost
want
don't
to
want to spoil it.
I don't want to spoil it, because I do think it's
Yeah.
like that's a
It's
fun
such a.
like. It's a fun, like, oh, that's who it is.
Well,
Because you hear
they
about him
did
a
that with
lot
the dad
throughout
character too. You
the
hear
day.
about him.
Exactly,
Oh,
exactly. Saying it
but
for
we
the
have
first.
to name the character's
Yeah,
name, because it's Alcock. It's
but
Alcock.
it's
Yeah, Ben
Ben
Alcock, I think,
Alcock. Yeah, Ben Alcock.
who has to be a relation of Woodcock, I'm sure, from Phantom Thread. I mean, just like that was that's a very good.
But there's a bit where he finally sits down with his other client, and there's a moment where Sandler, he says, I'm just jet lagged and tired and old. And it's just
Yes.
that's like his whole deal throughout this movie, and he really effectively plays it through his face. Like, there's a lot of great dialogue he
Absolutely.
gets. There's a lot of overlapping. There's a lot of like Altman-like bits of him and Clooney like bantering back and forth, but like Clooney's not
Not quite
paying them
hearing
at
each other
all.
or whatever. Yeah,
And
yeah.
but the way he wears his hangdog expression, and then what he just outright says, like what he is. You feel it, and you're like, that is what he's going through. And it's like, and he seems like a perfectly reasonable guy as far as, sure, he's working in an industry that requires you to kind of, do the dirty work to some degree, but he's also, guy cares about his family. He's married, he has kids, he has responsibilities, he looks after tons of different people, but most importantly, his longtime clients. And you just feel for this guy. I really like this performance of Sandler a lot. I thought he was really good here.
I loved him. And, it is what we witness him is like, death by a thousand cuts, these small humiliations that just accumulate throughout the movie until finally we get a gut punch scene. But there is a moment before that happens, among these death by a thousand cuts. I think he's in the car with Clooney. And there's this great mo moment where he's just again lost patience, a failure to connect with the Clooney character. And what you see. What occurred to me was what you're seeing is Sandler acting past the end of the scene. He is continually staying in the moment a beat or two longer than you expect, maybe even that Baumbach expects. But it's an extraordinarily good performance, and it would be just like Hollywood, and maybe Hollywood 10, 15 years ago. Maybe it's not the Hollywood anymore, where Clooney would get the nomination, maybe get a win here. It doesn't seem like anybody's in the conversation, the actual conversation, but it's absolutely Sandler's movie, his emotional arc. I mean, what this movie captures so well is, these people, like, who are the people we treat like shit? Hopefully no one. Hopefully no one, I will say that. But if we do, it's the people that love us unconditionally. And in this case, it's not Clooney's family. He tries and tries. All he's working is charm, the charm machine, the Clooney charm machine. And I feel like it's a great criticism of how he's employed that in movies over the years and everywhere else. But it's Sandler. He knows who needs him the most, who maybe loves him the most unconditionally. And of course, he gets the very worst, the real cruelty of Clooney's character. And I still think the movie maybe lets Clooney off the hook a little bit. We mentioned the Ben Alcott character. I do feel like through a little bit of rhetorical or screenwriting sleight of hand, I feel like we see the worst of that kind of actor in the Alcott character ultimately.
I agree with you. I do think it lets him off the hook. The issue is it's Clooney's inherent charm. Like that's a lot. Like, and that's why if you say Tom Cruise, I can see him playing thornier than Clooney would in this. Right. You can
see if you look more intense, it's the intensity. More intense.
Yeah. You can look at Magnolia or Eyes Wide Shut or some of these other, any number of Cruise performances and see like, there's an angry guy under there that you can bring out. Where with Clooney, I never get that. Like, it's not a bad thing necessarily. And it's not like Clooney can't play angry, but at the same time, it's like both the tone of this movie, the way it's written, and just the fact that Clooney is Clooney, who is he's very good here. He's not bad at all in this movie, but like there's not necessarily a necessity to have a certain edge, but it makes you sit and wonder what it could have been if there was someone else that maybe had that thing, but like who else has the sort of longevity of a career, one that is as, I don't know, acceptable as Clooney's, and someone that's willing to do this. Like, that's a very unique package, which is why, yes, you have to say someone like Tom Cruise, an impossible get, in order to, like, even begin considering who else would even fit in this kind of thing.
But I think Clooney's a good, I do think Clooney works here because his persona is so likable.
And what we see is
the illusion that they are friends, he and the Sandler character. I do feel like it's easier to believe that he would think that there is a relationship here more than transactional because of of what he's like. And, he continually lets people down, but he still seems like a good dude.
Well, yeah, and that's why I think the best portions of this movie are like the train portions of this film. I think that's like the juice of this movie that's like the best for me. There's a bit where it almost comes to a head when they're having one of these conversations that's overlapping and Clooney's just barely there and Sandler's like keeping up with every single aspect as well as informing him about other things, telling about his life all at the same time. And finally, Clooney's just like, can you get me a water?
Yes.
And
like, oh,
and,
great.
And
moment.
Sandler's like, can't you get it? Like, you've not heard anything I've said and you want me, like, and I'm your butler now? Like, I mean, like, it's so.
No, and he's just tried to connect with him. He's just been, I think he's just had a conversation with his wife, played by Gerwig, who's just like, he's not your friend. I mean, it's just, this relationship goes one way. And he's given a chance to test it. He wants to test Clooney's awareness of him. I'm like, his daughter's kind of sick and he tries to connect there and Clooney doesn't hear it at all. So I think that works. I do think that this is a space that Baumbach, it might be on the slighter end, but this is a space that Baumbach is really comfortable exploring that I think connects with much of his filmography, this tension that exists in the end of something and the sort of comic tragic component of having to go on living when something is ended. You know, he loves characters, often families, often members of families, to be thrust into this totally undefined, often very embarrassing stage of life. You know, we talked about kicking and screaming post college. You have no identity anymore. You're out, you know, Squid and the Whale. This is his first post-divorce movie, but this is the kids edition. And then you get Marriage Story, the parents edition, Francis Ha, you know, the Gerwig living in this mid-20s dead zone, defining yourself by what you were, what you hope to be, but what aren't yet. While we're young, encountering the young version of yourself, which means by definition, you are no longer young. And it's embarrassing. And I think he doesn't force maybe these characters to sit in embarrassment and humiliation for any prolonged stretch of time, but it is a really comfortable space for him. And I think he gets, to use your word, still a lot of juice out of it, especially in the Sandler character. And this evocation of like, there's ghosts. There's ghosts everywhere, right?
For sure. And I do think that speaks to why it's a better use of these actors to play vulnerable as opposed to playing humiliated. You don't need... let me back up to something I've said often on this podcast. Clooney used to be a very cool actor. used to be. And I think the defining point of when Clooney stopped being cool, still great. I still like Clooney, but the defining point when he stopped being cool on screen was when he was running down the street in flip-flops in The Descendants. No one looks cool in The Descendants. No one looks cool when you run in flip-flops. That's
You're
just how
totally
it is.
right.
And I think that's the exact moment where Clooney stopped being a cool actor, when he was running down the street in flip-flops in The Descendants, which is again a role that's also about a marriage that's kind of dissolved without his knowing, I guess, and like is left.
When he wasn't paying attention,
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah,
there's
right.
similar. There's a through line there as far as the kind of. I mean, you could even like, to connect it to something as really slight as what the Tickets to Paradise with him and Julia
Oh,
Roberts a
which
couple
was fun
years
to talk about movie star just putting over the putting a movie over the top just with movie
Exactly.
star charm, the two of those two. Yeah.
So to put to go back to here, I don't need Baumbach to put Clooney in a situation where he has to be like, egg on his face, humiliated.
No,
But
no.
I can watch movies where he is forced to reckon with something because he made mistakes. So when you have things like his interaction with his daughter and
Oh,
his
great
daughters,
stuff.
and he's either out of place because he's the old man in the room, or he's out of place because he's just unaware of how oblivious he's been, or doesn't like his ego is too big for him to realize that he's not the best person in these scenes. That stuff I'm happy to see Baumbach kind of dig in, let these actors dig into. Sandler the same way. Sandler's a guy who's vulnerable the entire movie, and just doesn't have to do pratfalls in order to like emphasize the point.
No,
There's
right.
ways you can do that. That can be effective. I mean, who doesn't like seeing someone just randomly slip and fall because like
This isn't
it
that
just
movie,
feels
though.
so out of character. But that's not this movie. Even Dern, who's Dern doesn't have a lot to do here, but she's
No.
a—I mean, she's Laura Dern, so she's quite effective
She's
in
great.
like the bits that she has to work with. The closest it comes to getting, I don't know, a little exaggerated is Billy Crudup's character in that whole sequence.
I
What do you
want to
think?
talk
What do
about
you?
Crudup.
Let's talk about Crudup. What do you think of Billy Crudup in this movie? He plays an old friend of J his old. Okay, let's put it this way. He plays Jay. He was a fellow actor in Jay Kelly's acting class, and he was the guy that apparently
Like
was the best
pre-fame,
actor.
yeah,
He was
right.
the best of all of them. And he is now in this position where things didn't go his way, but they certainly went Jay Kelly's way. And now there's a reckoning that happens early on in this film over that.
Yeah,
What?
I've never been a huge Crudup fan, and this movie sets him up to either succeed or fail, and I love that's what I mean. Just the structure, the care of the structure of this movie. We get a bunch of great payoffs. We talked about like some of the actors. We're waiting to see who's cast in certain roles. This is another one where the whole introduction of the Crudup character is a beautiful moment where Clooney has just attended this wedding of and I'm going to blank on the did I say wedding? A
A
funeral.
funeral. Yeah,
Sorry,
it
a
was like
wedding.
a,
Was there a wedding? Did I see a
it
different?
was a yeah, Jim Jim Jim
Broadbent's
Broadbent's
character.
character. Yeah, his is like a director that gave him his big break. Yes.
That's right. So he's just leaving this funeral, and Crudup just shouts from behind, just like, "Hey!" And Clooney's response is to turn around and be like, "Hey, bud,"
Hey, but
you
yeah.
know, which is typically, obviously, his way of like, "Yeah, I totally know you. I need to move on with my day." And then he does recognize him, this old acting class friend.
I thought it was more. I mean, this is nothing, neither here nor there. I thought it was more of like, he's out in public, therefore people recognize him on the
Yes,
street.
that's
So it's
his
just
response.
like, oh, hey, man.
Hey man, hey bud.
It's a good little moment as far as
It's a great
this is
moment.
how he conducts himself in life. Like,
That's what I mean. The detail, there's just
yeah.
little moments of
There's a
detail
lot,
there that are
especially because
great.
this movie puts a lot of Jay Kelly like in the lives of people that don't normally see
Yes,
celebrity,
that's
and
right.
so there's something there that's like captured pretty fast. But anyway, go back to
Yeah, Crudup,
Crudup.
Crudup.
Sorry.
So I do love that. Yeah, so he's built up as, at least by Clooney, as being like the great actor of his acting classes. Again, like they're what, 19, 20? It's obviously pre-fame for Clooney's character, and Crudup is the great actor of the class. And at one point, they sit down in a bar, and Clooney asks him to do an acting exercise. Which again, you're just like the anticipation. This character has been defined as the actor. And now he's being asked to prove it, to prove that he's a great actor. And so you're just like, this can't possibly work. And it works so well. It's so
Yes.
good. Crudup is so good in this scene. And it really is the character also, the way the character turns. Again, I don't think we have to get into the details of it, but, or maybe you do. I don't know how you
No,
handle
don't have to.
things in
No,
terms of
I don't need
spoilers.
to spoil too. So, yeah.
But I'll just say that I think it's a really, again, a nice bit of screenwriting, a way to start to have Clooney's character reflect on the ghosts of his past, which he's been able to largely ignore. You know, he's confronted by the failure of himself as a father, maybe more directly. But even that, it's like it takes his daughter graduating from high school and really literally leaving him when he hopes to maybe spend a couple of weeks with her. So there's that sense where he's confronted with that. And then what really sends him back to reevaluating all the choices he's made since he's, you know, transitioned from normal person to movie star. And I just think it's a brilliant device. I think Baumbach gives Crudup a great scene. And I think my question for you might be the handling of the flashbacks we get, which I enjoyed them, but I also feel like there was a little bit of lack of poetry, I guess I'd say, in the literal, we get full scenes. Nobody remembers their past like the way we see it. And I do feel like I wish they were better handled, but
I have the exact same response where you have these flashback sequences. And for one thing, when you have literal movie stars, George Clooney and Billy Crudup on screen, casting them younger is like, that's never going to, now that's not me saying, well, they should have done de-aging
or whatnot,
but automatically, if anything, I admire the fact that Noah Baumbach actually casted people that kind of resembled them, because that seems like such a caveman way of doing filmmaking these days, apparently.
I know, right?
Casting younger actors. But at the same time, I agree with you. I was never really pulled in by these moments. Fortunately, they don't take up too much screen time.
No, they don't.
And there are other flashback scenes that do involve like Clooney and his daughters and whatnot, or just references to past times that I think are more affecting. But yeah, these moments just either because of, I don't think it's miscasting, but either because of just like the power they're supposed to have versus what we're getting out of them just wasn't quite connecting with me the right way.
Or just
the placement of them. Like it just,
maybe
it didn't quite like, it wasn't clicking. I mean, that's just how
I mostly feel the same way. I do feel like there's still wonderful detail and complexity.
I agree there. It's giving me information in a way that doesn't feel like it's forced upon me. It's giving me something there, but it's just, it doesn't quite register the way I think it was ultimately intended to register.
And what's interesting, I don't know, this might be even a meta choice, because I think there's a reference to the idea that, you know, Clooney's memories via all the films that he's been in are all of our memories, like the collective memories of the audience as well. And it's interesting that Clooney's literal memories of this time, you know, being a younger actor, we see as short films. We see full scenes.
Yeah.
But there's a great moment where Sandler and Dern talk about a moment in their past, and we don't get to see that. And I'm grateful for it, but I love the contrast that, like, of course, we don't get to see the movie version of their lives, because they're not Clooney. But I do love that the sort of ghosts that haunt these characters include Sandler and Dern. I don't know if I needed that relationship to go where it went, but I think it was a great shorthand illustration of the way that, you know, at a certain point, once you get to a certain point in your life, haunting is not the wrong word. I mean, you know what I mean? It's just like that's life.
I do think it's the same thing as like a Steve Jobs, where in that movie it's stylized to the point where things have to occur all within like the same series of minutes. So it feels perhaps less organic, because none of this would make sense as far as like a reckoning between multiple characters all in the same time. But because we're all like confined to this train and we're in these weird circumstances, it almost makes up for it enough for you to accept that Sandler and Dern would be able to like recap their entire relationship within the span of like a few hours, where it's like, I can accept this sort of heightened reality that we're in, because we're in uncharted territory to begin with, because we're not even supposed to be on this train. We're supposed to be on a movie set with Clooney
They
keep mentioning these brothers. I was wondering, do you think it's the Safdie
brothers?
It's supposed to be the Safdie brothers. Like that's what they're going after.
What a great joke. I love the joke about Sandler saying like, I'm the one that had to go to Bushwick and smoke crack with these guys. That was such a great joke.
So like, that's what we're supposed to be, but instead we're on this train situation because Clooney, for getting like three hits in a row to him as far as Daughter's Gone. I
Yes.
interacted with Billy Crudup,
Yep.
and my director died, my favorite director died. Like, it was like, I got to get out of here. So like, we're in this like other, we've entered into some other dreamscape essentially.
An
At that
emotional space, you're
an
right. Like
emotional,
even not just for him, but for Sandler, for Dern, yeah, all
It's
of
all,
them.
yeah, it's all, so it's all coming to a head in a way that it wouldn't naturally occur otherwise. So I can go along with the fact that this is some magical train that's making all this come out in the open. As far as other, like, because we, I don't, again, we don't, I don't want to necessarily mention the actor who plays it, but just an aside, as far as a line that really made me laugh, when we're introduced to J. Kelly's father,
Yes.
there's a
Again,
bit,
another one, totally.
it's the kind of thing where, like, the way J. Kelly describes his father before you even meet him, it's like, okay, this is gonna be like kind of a rough guy, something's going on. And but like, because George Clooney's George Clooney's, like, I assume it's gonna be some actor that probably has charisma. And without giving away who it is,
Yeah.
the first people we meet are the people that were on the plane with him.
Yes.
And the first line we get is from a female pilot who says, "Your father's been entertaining us for hours with hilarious and often
Completely
very offensive
inappropriate.
stories." It's just like, that's
Yes.
exactly what just happened there.
And I love what Baumbach does with the camera there too. Suddenly we go into this
It's a
almost
first
like a
person shot, right?
POV.
Yeah,
Yeah, it's a first person
which, like,
shot where
out of
it's like,
nowhere, it was
I
like,
do feel
right?
like it's sort of like he's completely destabilized, and it does force us to be like he is uneasy at this moment.
There's a lot of like stuff in this movie from a directorial standpoint. I mean, we start off with a with like an Orson Welles style tracking shot that goes through like all the different modes of production or whatnot, which is, you know,
That was
well
cool.
done. There's, so like you mentioned the ghost, there's like a haunting sequence where Cody's in the woods and he's on the phone of his daughter, and the choices to, and the daughter's played by Riley Keough, and the choices to take her from being on the phone to just having her actually in the woods standing next to him. Like, there's, you know, there's cameras being mounted on certain things to give a perspective, and people in the background. There's just a lot of, like, Baumbach doesn't necessarily have to do these things, but I like that there's a, because it's not even like there's a classicalness to these. This is a lot of different kinds of ideas all being merged into one movie. And so it's like, yeah, why not? Let me,
And
I
also
got,
just like solving problems. Like we want, we've got the problem of like
we have a, how do we
we
get
have
a
a daughter
character?
who's not present with us. How do we make her more present? And how about the casting of Keo, the grandfather, the granddaughter of Elvis, playing the child of a famous actor? How about her line? I mean, there's so, again, Spomback, so many great lines. You're a really good movie star. You're really, I mean, as a brutal, cutting line, you're a terrible father. You failed as a father. And to say, and to forever a line like, you are a really good movie star, to be such a blow, is like, again, one of the qualities that makes this like, if this is relatively slight Baumbach or just relatively slight in terms of really, hitting at, the embarrassment of the elite, the Hollywood elite. Again, there's so many great details in moments, scenes, lines like that just hit.
I really want to mention that Jim Broadbent sequence too, just real
Oh, that's
quick, because
nice.
it's a very nice scene. I always like a good busy work scene, so like he's making a sandwich
He's
throughout
making
the
a
scene
sandwich.
while having all this dialogue and whatnot. Just, you know, it's Jim Broadbent. It's a good. Now, the one thing I was kind of rubbing against is to thinking, like, film wise, like, okay, he really wants Clooney to star in his latest feature, and even rewrote the part to be an older man to fit Clooney. And I'm just thinking, if J. Kelly's such a he could be a producer on the movie. He
That's
doesn't
what
have
I'm
to be like,
saying. He just needs his
why he,
name.
yeah, he doesn't, if he just needs his name, he doesn't have to star it. He could say, you know, from producer J. Kelly. I mean, like, that doesn't seem like a hard ask. Like,
Well, I think that's what they get. I do feel like that's the impression, the regret that he has. He could have just lent his name.
yeah.
Obviously, Broadbent's character, his instinct is like, if I can get
A
J.
movie star to
Kelly
be
in this
in the
movie,
movie, yeah.
this will be so much easier to get made. But the way that, Clooney's character shuts him down and just says, no, it's not for me. That seems to be part of the regret, being like, he just needed my name. And I do feel like, yeah, that was a great scene. And again, another scene that extends the whole conversation about mortality. There's a kind of weird aside about pickles. Pickles don't
Pickles don't
expire. It's about
expire.
expiration. It's just like, again, there's a little bit of a connective tissue there between pickles and movie stars as like, they don't age. Was there a great line that I think Sandler has about like, deaths are so weird, especially in Hollywood.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, and of course, you know, I think about, you know, the deaths that, you know, with the Redford and Diane Keaton, you know, the Keaton especially hit me because it's like you realize only after they die that you actually have a relationship with them. And it might be a relationship that you did not anticipate or ever articulate while they were alive. Like, I may not have even seen a new Keaton movie in 15 years. Didn't matter. This was somebody I felt like I knew, and now she wasn't there anymore. And it's I do feel like, yeah. Again, the movie has so much on its mind and is so, you know, has so much finesse in terms of how it integrates everything like that. And you get like Sandler's son is the one that brings up ghosts out of nowhere. And it's, this is a 5-year-old asking about ghosts. Of course he is.
Another like set of things I enjoyed, just Sandler, like the whole tennis court scene where it's Sandler, like he's got a young son in the background asking about ghosts. He has his real life daughter playing tennis with him.
Yes,
Greta Gerwig, Noah Baumbach's partner as his wife. It's just a lot of like, and it's done so like not like there's not like a scene where it's like we have to introduce each character, make sure you get, it's like we just, here it is, here's the life that this guy lives, and you get it automatically. And the
I love that we get a setup for the tournament. You kind of feel is kind of a big deal, and then you get to the tournament, it's just like
not even like a managed tournament, it's just like it's like, is it Tim Heidecker that's on the other side?
Wondering who that was. I feel like I should recognize
but it's just like basically like a gentleman's game of we'll just count it ourselves and like nobody's watching this. Like, is that it?
We could put it off, but it's not writing. This is, this isn't NAM. There are rules.
Oh, also, by the way, you've only saw this movie once. You saw it, maybe a day ago or something?
Last night, yeah.
The way you're quoting it so effectively, that does speak to, I mean, obviously it's fresh, but still, the way you're quoting it speaks to, I think, how strong the dialogue is here as far as it's, we get so many movies these days where I don't feel like you can easily like knock out like the quotes and things that are meaningful in the way that you used to be able to, whether that comes from just my own nostalgia or rewatching movies or just the fact that I feel like movies don't have the sort of the special sauce that, because everything's commoditized so quickly. And so it becomes less about the, not even
one liner, the pace at which things are made. And there's just not care.
I reflected on this with talking about Bill Macy in Train Dreams the other week, also in The Running Man, where that's a character actor who, he would live in like action movies of the 90s or things like that, because he's a guy that just, and him, like a Steve Buscemi obviously, or any number of character actors, where scenes of just exposition or connective tissue stuff, they get better because you have these guys that are extremely talented that can knock this stuff out.
And they could just put a little spin on it. Exactly.
And as a side effect, you remember all these scenes very, and they're like nothing scenes, but you remember these moments really, really well. We have so many less of those movies these days.
So true.
So like a film like this that can give you just lingering bits of dialogue that stick out because, hey, someone knows how to write this stuff. It's great to see.
Well, how about there's just such a throwaway line, and it's like they're in Italy. They're showing Clooney the award that they had to craft for him because they'd already turned over the, you know, the whole award ceremony to another actor. And they talked about this, this artisan, this local artisan working, as you say, in America, an all nighter. And he has infinite COVID. This line of this artisan having in the infinite COVID. I mean, again, it's just like you're sure Baumbach overheard somebody saying that at some point. It was just like, oh, that's gold.
Yeah.
I will absolutely hold on to that. But I do feel like, Baumbach just is somehow, you know, that he plays in these circles, these elite circles. That's where he lives, you imagine. But he's been able to stay grounded enough, or just sensitive enough to really, it still feels like, it feels familiar. The things that he's having his characters undergo. It's like, look, I have a senior in high school. It's going to graduate this year. I get it. I feel like he got what, you know, Clooney's character has largely, you know, was, you know, abandoned that family or was not a present father. I have been very present and I'm still feeling the loss of what that's like. And I feel like the movie really does get the details of that feeling really, really well.
So last question I have before we move on, by the end of this movie, we do have the achievement ceremony. And before we get to sort of the very end, this isn't really spoiling anything. I feel like the movie, it's nothing really to spoil beyond an actor is celebrated for his work. We get a montage of clips of Jay Kelly, but because it's Clooney, and there's 30 years of footage of Clooney movies, they instead choose to very deliberately use clips from various George Clooney movies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I imagine the average movie watcher does not care about this in the way that I do, and I'm about to present this to you. But
you've
I
seen
was
all those movies. You saw Leathernecks.
I've seen so, every... Yeah. I'm not going to say it necessarily took me out of it, but I certainly wasn't going to get emotional because I'm watching clips from Intolerable Cruelty, from Dust Till Dawn.
The Peacemaker.
Peacemaker a lot.
Yes, a lot of Peacemaker.
There's a lot of Peacemaker. A lot of Peacemaker.
Well, I think because they set him up as they set him up as an action star.
As an action specifically.
So they clearly aren't actually a lot of action movies with Clooney. So I actually knew this was coming. I don't know how I came across. I'm not on social media really. Okay. But I somehow had come across the fact that you know, they sat Clooney down and showed that montage. He didn't know it was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you see is a little bit of a very honest response of him being forced to engage with, you know, his last 35 years of filmmaking. And so I knew it was coming. So I can't say how I would have experienced it if I didn't know that Clooney's stuff was going to be up on screen there. I found it moving in the way the audience in the movie is supposed to be feeling it, where it's like, I'm seeing my past too. I saw all these movies. What else are they going to do? And this character is established well enough to be like, that's the kind of career I think he would have. I had nostalgic feelings about movies I had forgotten about, or about like a great shot from Ocean's 11. You know, just, I don't know. It totally worked on me. I get it. But I also am like, what's the alternative? Maybe not seeing anything. But,
or like making up movies.
Or making them up. Like AI do it.
I guess my question is less about, the effectiveness, but like, do you think this, because obviously the it's cutting back and forth between Clooney and the actual scenes. And when it's cutting to Clooney, I'm feeling it there, because obviously like I get what the scene's trying to accomplish. Do you think there's any intent to speak by nature of both it being Clooney's actual movies, but also the fact that because we've described him specifically as an action star, and so the power of these clips might feel a little diminished because it's not like these big sweeping dramatic moves, but more of just like, here's him with a gun, here's him in Sirion walking away from a car bomb.
I know, right?
Like, do you think that's supposed to be played somewhat for a little bit of comedy effect, or do you think it's very sincere?
Like, that's not how I experienced it. I felt like it was made in a sincere way. And I felt it in a sincere way. But you're right. I mean, I took pleasure in the fact that they took the one scene from Burn After Reading where he's holding
a gun.
But it seems like it's serious. So it's out of context there. But I took that as additional pleasure.
I guess that's where I'm at there too. Because again, I don't dislike the scene. It was just more a curiosity to me by the time we get to it. And I'm like, oh, they're going to show actual Clooney movies. Oh, these are the choices they're making, because you have to like think about like what reflects the kind of star Jake Kelly is. So I'm like, this is kind of fun being like, and like just hearing certain lines of dialogue, and I know that from a very specific movie, especially from which I love from Dust Till. I'm a huge from Dust Till Dawn fan.
Oh sure,
so hearing him say lines that in no way reference the fact that it's a movie about vampires, but he's like saying these big macho tough guy lines.
Yes,
so it's like, this is very enjoyable to think about this in the context of like this big Italian ceremony.
But I'm sure that happens all the time when you've got a celebrity whose career is a mixed bag by definition.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Yeah. But I really, really like that final and the final bit at the end.
Oh, great moment.
I really like that. I like the line he says. And it speaks to why I feel the film is, you know, while it's a good time watch, like there's fun to be, it's a comedy drama ultimately, but by the end of this thing, I am thinking, this is a sad man. this is not, you know, as much as he's tried to do within the, you know, the last few days of his life, even though, you know, it's not like he's dying, but like the last few days here, as far as reconciling with certain aspects of his career and the people he knows and his relationships or whatnot. By the end of this thing, like you said at the very beginning, it's not a film that's about to say, and then he turned it all around.
Nope.
Like, it's not this movie.
He just wants another shot. Yeah, it's really good. And I did have to say, it was a nice little coincidence that I got to see Alba Rohrwacher in a little scene where, of course, she's in La Chimera as well.
Yeah.
So that was nice. And she's very, very funny. Everything about that, the energy of the Italian set, a part of the film is just has a totally different energy. It's super fun. In addition to having that underlying sadness. So yeah, I don't know where to place this on my Bombach ranked. It's somewhere in the middle, even if I feel like it's nearly as accomplished as his best stuff. I really enjoyed it.
It's fortunate he doesn't have a lot of like duds, so it's not.
No, he does not.
So it's, you know, putting it in the middle is like, yeah, it's amidst all these other really good movies. So it's, you know, it is what it is. The way we rate things on here is when people should go and see these movies. Obviously, this is on Netflix, but if you were to say when people should go and watch Jay Kelly, when what would you say to that?
Yeah, ASAP, do it. Yeah, fire it up. Put Jay Kelly in the Netflix top 10. Do your part. Really
there
good.
You go. I would agree with you. I think it's an enjoyable film. I think you have at least two very good performances, but you have a lot of really good performances throughout here. Sandler in particular, I think, is just shining so high. So like, if you want another like example of Sandler being good in a more serious minded film, here's a new one before you're ready to go.
I do feel like it's the end of your crush and people are like trying to prioritize what they're seeing. And I think they're probably seeing that this is like maybe not the best of Bombach. If you're at all a Bombach fan, I mean, do not wait. It's really, really strong.
Given that it's Netflix and it's Clooney, it's the kind of thing that'll probably attract attention by default. So I would say, if anything, if this is like one of your first Bombach films, like you got a whole great journey to go on because of watching. If you like this, there's a lot of very good films he's made to go along with it. I'll also note this on Netflix. Currently, there's a 50-minute making of Jay Kelly that also is on Netflix as well. If you watch this movie and you get to the end of credits, it'll be like, it'll give you the, however your settings are. It told me, it's like, do you want to watch the making of Jay Kelly? And I'm like, yes, I do. So I did. And it's a nice fly on the wall, like breezy thing. It's nothing too revelatory about like the writing process or anything, but in terms of just like putting you in the room with them during certain scenes, and it's assembled in chronological order. So it's a nice little like additional bonus if you feel like engaging in more of Jay Kelly's world.
Nice.
All right. Unfortunately, Abe is still not be able to join us, so we don't have a game to challenge Sam and I against this week. So we'll have to press forward and do one our last segment here, which is of course Out Now feedback, which is where we go over the various questions to answer on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Out Now Podcast. We asked a number of questions to our listeners; they gave us some answers. And we got a question or two as well that we'll go through. Sam, feel free to throw any answers that you might have as we go through these questions here. First up, what's the best George Clooney performance that only he could give? Maxwell Haddad writes, Out of Sight. Chris Cleland has Jack in The American and Seth in From Dusk Till Dawn. Dave Maloof writes, Bruce Wayne / Batman. Just kidding. How about Seth Gecko? P.S. J. Kelly just dropped on Netflix, right? I mean, you're listening to this now, so I'm going to say yes. Yes, it did. And Philip Hurd writes The Descendants.
Oh.
What's a George Clooney? What's the best George Clooney performance that only George Clooney could do?
I think it's probably Michael Clayton, but my actual answer might be Fantastic Mr. Fox. I think he's an actor that for a long, long time, and he's gotten slightly better. He's a very busy actor. He has a lot of twitches and stuff like that, and that can be a distraction. So I remember seeing, you know, Fantastic Mr. Fox back in 07 and being like, oh, finally, because he's still able to convey everything that's special about him without the distractions. And I think he's great. He does a great bit of voice acting in that. Again, co-written by Bombach. And I don't think they have not worked together, obviously.
Since,
but obviously I love him in a number of films, but I like the phrasing. I think Clayton, which I have not seen since 07 either, so two 07 movies, but I remember that being the least busy Clooney. He seemed to have shut it all down. And again, you need somebody in that kind of role that is still really charismatic, because otherwise the work he's doing, you know, doesn't have a lot of that.
Assuming you're not living under a rock, I think you're probably aware that Michael Clayton has a very huge fan base these days.
Oh, I know it does. I'll
just say it holds up very well. It's easy movie.
I've been
to put
wanting
on.
To rewatch it for the last 15 years.
It's a very easy movie to just like have on and be like, oh, yeah. And you can just tune in when you want to be like, these scenes rock. But yeah, I agree with you. I think Clayton's a very good example. Honestly, I do think his first Soderbergh collaboration, Out of Sight, I do think that is a very Clooney specific performance that works as far as being a thief that you cannot help but like fall in love with, and his attitude, the writing, I think all of that really combines well with like Clooney's sensibilities and certainly put him on the right track as far as what kind of movie star he wanted to be from there.
Yeah, I mean, of course, I love Out of Sight.
Yeah.
I think he's really good in Hail Caesar too. I you know, as
his Coen's work, I mean,
is mixed, but I really do like I with Out of Sight. I mean, I think about, of course, the scene, the first scene with Lopez. I sense an actor trying a little too hard there. Mm. It was also the audition scene, you know, that he, you know, he auditioned with a number of actresses, and you get a sense of somebody that's it's a little like he's done this a million times. It doesn't feel really spontaneous and fresh. I think he's very good. I love the film, but I think there are better Clooney performances.
All right. Next question is basically the same. What's the best Adam Sandler performance that only he could give? Max O'Hadid writes, Punch Drunk Love, a perfect dramatic distillation of his comedic sensibilities. I want he and PTA to work together again. Mark Hoffmeyer writes, don't mess with the Zohan. Jet T Chase's hairstyling, romantic lead, silly accent, perfect. Dave Bluth writes, Howard Ratner from Uncut Gems, the propulsive frenetic energy of that performance should have garnered him an Academy Award nomination. Philip Hurd just has hustle. And Chris Gillan agrees with he was amazing in Uncut Gems for his quirky, but for his quirky comedy, it says Robbie Hart and the Wedding Singer or Henry Roth in 50 First Dates.
What's I'm tempted to go Wedding Singer almost, which I have not seen in over 20 years. But in terms of what we get there is, or Gilmore, you know, where it's just like you understand what PTA was tapping into in terms of casting him. I do feel like Gilmore. I always reference this moment. There's that moment in Gilmore where he's been invited to like the 19th hole, you know, as a joke, and he's out there alone. He's got a suit on. It's pouring rain. It might as well be a scene from Punch Drunk Love, because it gets at the he's able to convey
the sprinklers go off. That's
the sprinklers go off. I'm sorry, you're right. Yeah, it's not raining. You're right. Yeah. That's right.
That's the joke they play on him, where he's like, "Yeah, get here at this specific time," and he gets there, and nobody's there, and the sprinklers go off.
But the sprinklers go off. Yeah.
For one thing, Happy Gilmore is like, that's my favorite Adam Sandler comedy. And then, yes, that's what I love about Punch Drunk Love is exactly what you just said. The PTA is like, I can do something with this. And he did. And it's a very specific, like, as much as I love a lot of these dramatic roles Adam Sandler's taken, and I'm not even going to say that they're all like the same or anything. I don't think that at all. But I do think there's something so unique about what Punch Drunk Love is, where he's just like, it's a different kind of person, someone that's been so like ravaged by abuse by his sisters and all that. Like it just, and now it's like formed into this absurdist hate ball that like he knows how to, he keeps it contained. Anyway, it's just, it's there's great. A lot there that I really, really,
but agree. I do feel like it's PTA employing it. There's so
For
much.
Sure.
I mean, the score, I just rewatched it.
Dialing that performance to like a couple degrees differently, that comedic Sandler into like a couple of other degrees. And suddenly it's this and it's, yeah.
Yeah, but Hustle and Jay Kelly, I mean, I just feel like it's great, great work.
It's
so good. Yeah.
Next question, straightforward. What's your favorite Noah Baumbach film? Luke Thompson writes, The Squid and the Whale very much relates to my own youth. Dave Bluth has, geez, this is terrible to admit, but Jay Kelly is the first Baumbach film I've ever watched. And P.S., I'm in the process of watching Is It As I Write This. I guess it's time to scratch me off that cinephile list. Philip Hurd writes, White Noise. And Chris Glenn has, well, if we were talking about written, it's The Life Aquatic of Ziv Sisu. If directing, then Francis Ha.
Boy, they're all so good. I mean, I did rank them just in anticipation of this conversation, Aaron, and I'm just like, if I had to just save one, right, you know, I think it's Marriage Story, just because I think it's his greatest kind of achievement in terms of the performances, the script. It just feels like the best version, and he's like close to the best version of everything he did. I love Mistress America. I love While We're Young. I love The Weirdo. I love, what would you call it? The Blank Check.
The White Noise.
Yeah. I love White Noise. It was my film of that year or one or two. Loved it.
The White Noise, the LCD sound system track at the end of that credit sequence. I've watched that on its own.
Yes,
Netflix actually clipped it out. So I've watched it many, many times.
Same.
If I hear a whisper of that song, I'm like, I'm going to the internet right now so I can watch it.
Totally.
Love that you brought up Mistress America, because that, like, I'm with you. I think Marriage Story is my top, but Mistress America rules. Oh, like, I watched it again. I was a part of a podcast called The Summer of 2015 at 10, so when it would be summer movie season of 2015, and Mistress America came out during the summer of 2015. So I was like, I get to watch, like, part of the joy of this is I get to watch certain movies. I'm like, I get to watch Mistress America, as if I don't own it and can't watch whatever I want. But, like, I watched it, I'm like, this movie's just pitch perfect. Like, everything about it, and it's like 80 minutes. Like, it flies by. It's such a, it's a snappy screwball comedy, but it's so, like, as we already mentioned about the kind of distillation of where you are in your life, it's such a great representation of that. Great performances. Oh my God, it's so fun. Marriage Story.
Yeah, what is
though,
the favorite line? What is it like? Holy shit, those pregnant women are super smart. Yes. just remember.
but Marriage Story, I do think that's just like top, you know.
Yeah.
If he does a movie that's like better than Marriage Story, I'll be like, man, Baumbach just.
Same.
You know,
that's like, how what? I feel. Like, you made your masterpiece. Yeah. And then you can just do whatever you do is just gravy. Yeah. Great.
Our next question we have, what are some great films about actors? Dan Maloof writes, gosh, gotta be Robert Altman's The Player. Although that movie is about a producer and a writer, it is still about the business. Does it count? And of course, Alejandro González Iñárritu's Birdman. Apologies, a slight melancholy note is attached to that film. I was in the middle of a very messy and painful separation and eventual divorce, and my ex-wife and I were trying to reconcile. We went to go and see that movie, as brilliant as it was, and is, it didn't help. It's why I've only ever seen the film once. Sorry for the TMI. Nope, that's a nice story. Well, it's not the happiest story, but it's an interesting dissection of that film. Philip Hurd writes, I love Their Finest. They're fun with Sam Claflin and Gemma Arterton, the World War II film. That's an interesting choice. Okay. It's a good movie. Chris Good has Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Jeff Mendes has Galaxy Quest, Hail Caesar, and Tropic Thunder. Great films about actors.
I'm waiting for somebody to say All About Eve. Clouds of Sils Maria. I'm looking
that's
at
a good one.
Inland Empire. Mulholland Drive.
Mulholland Drive. Yeah, naturally.
Opening Night is the one. Jenna Rollins. Okay. Yeah. Oh, man.
Go to Cast of Eddies.
Yeah. Great stuff. Sunset Boulevard. Okay. Yeah.
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 These are all fantastic picks. I mean, there's not much to compete with here. Bowfinger comes to mind.
Good one.
So I've been thinking a lot about Eddie Murphy lately because I watched that. Have you seen that?
Oh, I didn't
see
it.
Eddie Murphy doc? It's good as far as if you want to see like a distillation of Eddie Murphy, the actor, and not really focus on anything else about Eddie Murphy's life beyond some various details. It's not a bad watch. Obviously, it's produced by him. So it's but it just barely avoids being pure hagiography. Like, it has enough going on where you're like, well, there's some stuff here. And watching an hour and a half of footage of Eddie Murphy is not the worst thing you can do.
Like, it's just, that's what I wondered what the experience was.
So inherently
was
funny. Yeah.
I mean, really, it's when he came back on Saturday Night Live. It was probably, I don't know, it could be 10 years ago now.
It's a little ago, yeah.
But it was like, I was so happy to have that experience because it was like, oh, this guy is just one of the best
to ever do it.
He can
walk in a room and just do it.
And so it's the kind of thing that makes you a little sad as well, because you're like, I just want more of that. This guy who is so gifted, didn't prioritize doing more of that, but that's all right.
And there are, because a lot of it's just him like walking around his wonderful mansion and just kind of taking you through stories. There's parts where, like, he brings out puppets at one point of, like, Bill Cosby.
Oh, somebody,
and just, he just, it's just, turns it on right away, instantly. He's like, this guy's the funniest person on earth. Like, what else do you need to do?
So Eddie Murphy is Jay Kelly? Could it work?
You joke, but there's a version where that could, like, that could play. There's a version where that could play.
Agreed.
Next question we have here. What time is it? What are the worst/silliest? Who are the worst/silliest runners when it comes to actors? Mark Hoffmeyer has John Cena's running in 12 rounds still haunts me. Tony Kogan wrote, Peter Capaldi in pretty much anything. Local Hero and In the Loop are standouts. Chris Gillen has Rowan Atkinson as Mr. Bean in Mr. Bean's Holiday. And Dave Maloof writes, got to be Jim Carrey running as either Lloyd Christmas or Ace Ventura. Jeff Mendes points out Anna Faris in Scary Movie. Yes, there's a fun scene where she's parodying Nev Campbell and she like flails her arms around when she runs away. Do you have any worst or silliest runners in movies?
I wish something was top of mind. I got nothing.
My, as I already mentioned, George Clooney in The Descendants. That's kind of my go-to for just because it's not even his fault. It's just you can't run down the street in flip flops and expect to be taken seriously. And I know Alexander Payne knew that. That's a good choice.
That's why that scene's in
every trailer of that film, because it's ridiculous. Right. You're watching smooth as fuck George Clooney, and he's like in flip flops. He's like, what's happening here? All right, next question. What are some great films about regret? Dave Malouf writes, Peggy Sue Got Married, pre-Francis Ford Coppola having to sell his watch collection because he invested everything in the bomb that was Megalopolis, which actually is one of my favorite movies of 2024. Talk about regret. Maybe someone would make a movie about that. Wait, is Megadoc actually that film? Haven't seen it yet. Have you watched Megadoc, the documentary?
I know. Yeah,
that's it's very entertaining.
It's Figgis, right? Isn't it?
It's Figgis. If you expect to learn anything about the story of Megalopolis, no. It is pure fly on the wall stuff, and the scenes between Francis Ford Coppola and Shia LaBeouf are hilarious because these two do not get along whatsoever. They never see eye to eye, and it's very entertaining. Chris Grimm writes American History X, and it's an oldie, but Wild Strawberries definitely hits the mark. So okay, films about regret. So
I'm looking. I'm just like letterboxed searching lists, and Oppenheimer comes up. So yeah, that's solid. Sure. But boy, I know there are a ton. That's a great top five list.
Yeah.
Regret. I don't know. I don't really have anything.
I don't have the time to like think about this. So let's see. Next question we have. Name some great movies about one-way friendships. Dan Malouf writes The Cable Guy, a movie that has only gotten better with time, and Heathers. Philip Hurd writes The Remains of the Day and Vertigo. Midge got done wrong.
Oh, funny. Yeah, she did.
And Chris Cleveland writes The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Okay, yeah, sure. I'm looking at Regret too. Eternal Sunshine obviously would be a good one, right?
Yeah.
One Way Friendships again. That's another good top five list. Okay, yeah. All right, let's move on to the next one. I'm going to keep searching.
Fair enough.
You've got another one.
Yeah. Well, now we have questions. We got two. I have time for these questions. Okay, I'm going to do one of these questions. I'm going to save one of these questions for another time, but I'm going to ask this with this question. Mark Hoffmeyer asks, what's your favorite cinematic sandwich? Do you think the sandwiches from Sorry Baby belong in the top five? I have an answer for this question because it's a Sandler-related question. There is the James L. Brooks film Spanglish, a film that is otherwise not super memorable. However, Adam Sandler's character plays a chef, and there is a one point where Adam Sandler goes through this very laborious process of making like what looks like the best egg turkey sandwich like you've ever seen. You see all the steps, you see him lay out all this stuff, and because he's a chef, the movie wants to emphasize that he's just great at doing this. And he like cuts it in half and it has that perfect like crunch sound, and he's about to take a big bite, and then like somebody storms in the door and they have like a big James O. Brooks style argument. However, the sandwich is very memorable in that movie. It's I feel like you could probably Google Spanglish sandwich, and it would easily come up like as like tons of clips online of like, yeah, that scene's great. Like that's the scene
I'm at a site called I'm Hooked on Saigon Drugs, Best Movie Sandwiches, Spanglish, number two.
There you go.
I like the best meatball sandwiches Gary Busey has ever tasted, Point Break. That's a nice sandwich. I always love a meatball sandwich.
Me too.
So. Yeah. Not to give me two, exactly. Exactly. Oh, I just think of Big Night. I know there was no sandwiches, but you bring up food, I'm going to talk about Big Night.
Big Night has great food scenes, that's for sure.
I mean, it's not a sandwich, but it is like everything baked in a piece of bread. So that's kind of a sandwich, I guess, right? I forget what that's called. Do you remember the big that's timpani? It's called a timpani.
Timpiano.
I'm calling that a sandwich.
It was in one of our games once. That's how I remember it. It was somewhat recent.
That's right.
All right, that's out now feedback, and that's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of Out Now with Aaron and Abe. You can find everything I do on my personal Substack page, thecodazeek.substack.com. I'm the editor-in-chief at We Live Entertainment. All my movie reviews can be found there. I also co-host the award-winning Two Black Guys Talk Godzilla. My friend and fellow film critic Terrence Johnson and I talk about the Godzilla films in chronological order. We're working up to season two, where we talk about the Heisei era, the 80s and 90s era of Godzilla films, so stay tuned for that. And I'm on all the socials at Aaron's PS4. Sam Van Halgren, where can people find more of you online?
Well, definitely, you can find me on Film Spotting. I mean, not on the mic typically, but certainly if you're a family member, I sit in for the monthly bonus shows. Otherwise, I am I'm doing the editing and producing for Film Spotting. I hang out, socialize on the Film Spotting Discord. That's where Aaron finds me, and I have largely abandoned, you know, all the others, even attempts to, you know, correct film Twitter by moving to Blue Sky. I just haven't gone there. So, yeah, you're gonna have to work hard to find me. But if you need me, contact Aaron.
All right. You can find all the other episodes of Out Now with Aaron Dame on iTunes, Audible, Spotify, and Stitcher. Feel free to email us at outnowpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on all the socials, Facebook, X, Instagram, outnow_podcast, some form of that. So you'll find our, it's pretty easy to find our show if you just search us. And yeah, next week, we shall see. I just mentioned James L. Brooks. We have a new James L. Brooks film coming out, Ella McKay. That might be our main review. We might do another triptych, another kind of multiple reviews in one episode, just to kind of get a lot of stuff covered. We shall see. Fortunate that Abe wasn't able to join us today, but Sam, thank you very much for joining me for this discussion. I think
this was so much fun. Thanks for having me again. I appreciate it.
For sure. Looking forward to having you back, if not soon enough, at least for Minecraft Story 2.
It's coming.
But yeah, that's good for this week's episode. So thank you very much. Thanks, listeners, for listening. Until next time, so long and goodbye.